Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. So guys, we've got a lot of new Chromebooks coming out. We've got new Chromebooks, new Chrome boxes, some of which were announced at CES and others that are just getting announced on their own. So guys, tell me a little bit about these new devices we've got.
Yeah, we literally had to make a list so that we can try to remember to cover all of the things that have been announced because we've got kind of a combination of different things happening. So we've got manufacturers having announced education Chromebooks, Chrome boxes and all that kind of stuff, but we've also found some cool new stuff in the repositories too. So we're going to kind of dive into both of those real quickly and mention a few of those. So I'm going to list them off and then we'll kind of backtrack. So first off, the things that have been announced just since the beginning of the year, so within the last few weeks, HP has unveiled a Chromebox and some education-focused Chromebooks. Acer has unveiled the Acer 11, the Spin 11, kind of like the consumer version of that device. We'll talk about that in a second. The C732, which is an education-focused device. Asus has put out the Chromebox 3. Lenovo put out a few different education Chromebooks. Dell put out a new line of education Chromebooks. And so we're just seeing a ton of stuff just kind of show up at the same time. And mainly, what it seems like a lot of that was centered around the, a couple education shows that happened earlier this year.
The BET show in London and then the FETCI in Orlando. So they were all gearing up and getting ready for that. I think Samsung's really the only one left out of the mix. So.
Yeah, and we're going to get to something cool with Samsung in a second. But let's any notable stuff? I got a couple thoughts. But
yeah, I mean, for me, the big news, I mean, all the education devices are awesome. The Acer's new little 11 was really neat just because it kind of, it has a more consumer feel than some of the devices we've seen in the past because of the design. It's, you know, it's a very inexpensive device. It's $249, I think, to start, but the body is really nice, the chassis with the blue and the kind of has a metallic feel to it. But for me, the Chromeboxes were the big deal. We've been waiting for Chromeboxes for what seems like an eternity, and now we have three KB Lake 8th generation Chromeboxes all launched within the same month, and that's going to be huge. Kind of anxious to see what the pricing is going to be on those, but they're all looking to be essentially the same as far as processor availability. You can get Celeron all the way up to the 8th generation KB Lake and USB-C and a plethora of USB-A ports on them. So,
yeah, I'm hoping, like, the i7s and the Chromeboxes usually are pretty steep, something, what, $600, $700 at least. I'd be shocked if we don't see that. However, knowing that we could maybe have a Core i5 or even, you know, the i3 in some of these Chromeboxes, and hopefully they're still built with the ability to open them up and, you know, drop more RAM and all that kind of stuff. That just makes such a compelling package that you can buy something with a small amount of storage and, you know, a small amount of RAM and then go and upgrade it yourself for a very small amount of money.
Yeah, because especially the Asus, the new Asus looks almost identical to the last generation. I'd presume it'll probably be pretty easy. The Acer kind of has the coolest look of all of them.
Yeah, a little bell shape.
We also know that the Acer is, it could be a pain to take apart. We'll just have to wait and see when we get one.
So. Yeah, so for quick note, I upgraded multiple of the Asus Chromeboxes that have come along, and I mean, literally to the point where I can open it up, drop in RAM and storage, 15 minutes tops, and you know, reboot and be up and going. When I took apart the CXI2, so the Acer's new one is the CXI3, CXI2, I probably had to work on it for an hour and a half because the way it was layered, I had to literally take every part apart in order to get to the pieces that were upgradable. So hopefully they made some changes there. But there's obviously, they're not saying whether or not these are going to be easily upgradable, but I can't imagine they're going to solder stuff down on a Chromebox. That just wouldn't make any sense. So hopefully, one of the other ones I wanted to speak to real quick was the Spin 11. And so along with everything pretty much we talk about here, all the stuff's on ChromeUnbox.com. So if you want to see pictures of this stuff or get more details, because we're spending a few minutes on this because there's just so many devices coming out. There's more stuff there to get more details. But the Spin 11, we actually had to reach back out to Acer and figure out what was going on there because all the specs lined up to look exactly like the current Spin 11. But the Spin 11 that's out now is a consumer focused or a education focused Chromebook. This one is going to be a consumer focused one, and though it's not aluminum, it kind of has more of the aesthetic in a plastic version of what the kind of a little bit of a morph between the Acer 11 that we saw at CES and the 15. Kind of has that slightly more metallic look. Again, it's not metal, and I want to say it's going to be 250 something like
that. Yeah, somewhere around that. So essentially the education one with a lot of the probably some of the rugged specs stripped away,
sure,
to make it lighter and cheaper for the average consumer.
But the Spin was really good as far as, you know, it had a decent screen on it, and the build was really good, and then the pen support and stuff was really
good. One thing to point out too, when we met with Acer, the R11, which many of you may have, is probably arguably one of the most popular consumer models of a Chromebook out there. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few different variations of it, and a lot of people have them. But one of the biggest complaints with it, or one of the biggest issues, was cracking and breaking around the hinges. And Acer pointed out that they've addressed this issue in their newer devices. So we may do an article about it, but long story short, they've done some changes to the hinges of how they're laid into the display and the base of the device to eliminate that problem. Because, you know, end of life on a Chromebook, 6.5 years, but if the hinges snap off in two, what's the point?
So yeah, and right. They pointed out something really cool to us. This is kind of an aside, but you got all these Chromebooks that open 180 degrees, and I've said multiple times, either in reviews or articles, like, why is this even a thing? Yeah. Like, maybe to share it, I guess? I don't know what this is. And they pointed out, what Gabe was just saying, the reinforced hinges kind of go up into the screen, basically. But then they open up 180 degrees so that kids, they found through research, tend to pick their devices up by the screen, by the corners of the screen, just, you know, like, rip them up off the desk, which I've never seen.
What a painful thought.
Like, but apparently that happens all the time. So it's meant to open up to basically take that force,
right,
so that it's not being applied to the hinges. So good on them for doing their research and adjusting accordingly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you mentioned Samsung just a minute ago. So let's move on to some Chromebooks that aren't out yet, but Chromebooks that we are excited about.
Yeah, Samsung, the Samsung part probably is the most compelling of these things. And so let's back up real quick and just mention the other ones that are coming. So we have Lux, and Sirocco, which we've been following for a little while, and Cheza, I would assume that's how you pronounce it. Lux being yet another KB Lake-powered detachable Chromebook. So that puts us up to three now. So we're looking at Nautilus, Lux, and Sirocco. There is Poppy, which we've been tracking even longer than all of these, but it is clearly made as a reference device. So we see like all of these getting references to Poppy as they're being made. But we don't have a ton of stuff on Lux yet. We
just very
detachable
little,
KB Lake. And then Sirocco, there's nothing necessarily new, but we just kind of wanted to point out the fact that there's now, it's not just one detachable Chromebook, because there's really only one tablet being worked on, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but it seems detachables are the next wave, right? About a year or so ago, we saw convertible Chromebooks was like, that was the next wave. We saw them just coming everywhere. It seems like detachables are going to be the new thing. So, but the most important one probably right now is Nautilus, the
Absolutely.
One that we know most about. So
Yeah, it's a... It's not been in development longer, but it's definitely appears to be getting more attention than any other. Mm-hmm. And the features on it, obviously, we've written quite a bit about Samsung making it and some of the equipment that it has. It has a camera that is the same unit that's in the LG G6 phone. Just a lot of details on it, and really expecting to hopefully hear something or see it soon, possibly. I'd like to think Samsung's next big phone event, but I doubt it. So,
yeah.
You know, early spring, maybe. a lot of people were anticipating it at CES. It was not at CES. There was no mention of it at CES. No. We didn't really expect any mention of it at CES.
And we're only, what, 6 months in or something?
Yeah. Roughly about 6 months at this point. And, you know, Eve was a year, a.k.a. the Pixelbook, was a year in development. Mm-hmm. And granted, the Pixelbook is a new thing, and it has some features that other devices don't. It's still a convertible, so they're... The logistics of designing Eve, I'm sure there was a lot that went into it, but Nautilus is the first detachable, so I would not expect to see it
inside of a year.
Yeah,
and the interesting pieces on it, I mean, stowable stylus, Samsung made, you know, it's going to be the first to usher in, apparently, video recording on Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, well, just that the Sony sensor that's in the camera, I mean, is going to be...
It's actually got a decent camera on it, by far the first one. And we've even seen quite a bit of just motion on the camera app for Chrome OS in the repository. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it looks like there's work being done from a camera perspective on this one. It's interesting because Samsung's done a lot of devices, and Samsung has, obviously, the ability to make things at scale quickly. So even if at a year, I think that's a quick turnaround to be the first of any type of category for Chrome OS. But I think Samsung can do that.
Absolutely.
I think they can pull that off. Yeah. Cause I mean, they had Kevin ready inside of a year too. And
right.
It would have been one of the earlier convertible stylus toting Chromebooks. There were some hiccups that made them push it back, but and that was mainly from Chrome OS's software standpoint. But I'm excited, super excited to see what Nautilus ends up being. Because if it's a detachable version that's faster and better than the Chromebook Pro, that's real compelling.
Right. And I think we're looking at the same thing. You know, it's mostly about the software. Obviously, Samsung and Microsoft and anyone else already has the capability of making a nice detachable. It's just a matter of making Chrome OS work with a nice detachable.
And there's just some things that have to get ironed out. I mean, split screen apps, and we're going to talk about some of those things in a second. But, you know, those things have to get ironed out before a device that can be used as solely as a tablet. Like the Pixelbook, the Chromebook Pro Plus all have keyboards always attached to them. So if something's just like, this isn't working so well on the tablet side, I can flip my keyboard around and go back to work. But a detachable and or a tablet, there are going to be times where you might have walked away from your keyboard. There isn't an option to have the keyboard and go get it. You're in a meeting or whatever.
Right.
So they've got to iron some of these things out. And they're working on it. We're seeing that across the board. But there's just pieces that need to get fixed.
Next evolution.
Yeah.
Right? So speaking of the kind of ever-evolving world of Chrome OS, one thing that we saw at the, the British Educational Training and Technology Show,
yes,
aka the BET, right?
Yeah.
Is it the BET?
It's actually in doing some articles on it. It in the past few years has just been, you know, truncated to BET. It is BET. Referred to as the BET Show.
The BET Show. All right. So out of the BET Show, one thing that we saw, and this is something that we've done videos on, we've written about it before, but Neverware, one of their products is called Cloud Ready, I guess. Is that the actual product? So Cloud Ready, if you aren't familiar, is a way to get Chrome OS on old PCs or Mac devices. And... you know, it's been out, we've done videos on it, but at the BET Show, we saw kind of Google coming together with Neverware to kind of really reinforce that relationship. So, what did we see there, guys?
The big deal here is, you know, Neverware has been around for a little while. We have a video, it's actually our most viewed video on our, mm-hmm, on our YouTube channel, that shows you how to go through this process if you have a supported Chromebook or a supported Windows or Mac device. Basically kind of makes it a Chromebook. And as quick as I can be with Cloud Ready Neverware, Cloud Ready is based on Chromium OS, which is the open source platform that Chrome OS is built on. Chrome OS can have parts of it that are not open source. So Play services and stuff like that, for instance, the App Store, that's not open source. And it's the same way with Android. So AOSP is the open source part of Android, but the way Android gets delivered on a Pixel, for instance, is the some of Google's additional things that are not open source part of the Android open source project. So when we say that Cloud Ready can turn a device into a Chromebook, you know, we kind of got to put that in parentheses. It's kind of doing that. And so it's always, to me, it's always just kind of existed as this other thing that I was sure Google was like, hey, that's a neat thing that they're doing, and right. we want to see other people do that. Great. There's Flint OS. There's other ones that take Chromium OS. It's always going to be a little behind Chrome OS, but they take Chromium OS and they deploy it at scale to other devices. But Neverware has been the company that's really pushed this, and I mean, they have huge install bases because they can go to these schools that have old Windows PCs that are old enough, and we all know 4 or 5 years old, they're not getting along anymore. It's just Windows is not going to run on it very well. They can install via USB Chromium OS on the side, see how it runs. If it runs well, they can actually tell it to, hey, overwrite the entire system. We did so on video, and that device moves crazy fast. Mm-hmm, I mean, and it was a second generation Core i5, so I mean, many, many, many years old processor, and it just flies with Neverware Cloud Ready on it. And so, again, I've seen this as like this kind of side thing. Like, you know, Google's fine with it, of course, but I've never thought that they would fully support it.
Right. And Google still benefits as well, because when Neverware goes into a school and they deploy this on 5,000 devices, that school has still has a G Suite account, and they still sure. have management console. They're still paying for whatever the management licenses are for each of those devices. So Google's still benefiting. So they've always kind of supported Neverware, right. but we've seen in the last 6 months that support go from support to Google. Google's kind of partnered with Neverware. Yeah. I don't know they have partnered with Neverware.
Yeah, Neverware was literally at their booth, and they were offering what people could just. You could bring your device and you could switch it for you.
I think they may have done this in Orlando too, but you could literally come by, drop off your compatible Neverware Cloud Ready compatible device, and they would have it ready for you by the end of the day at the show, and you just come by and pick it up. Now I don't. They didn't say whether or not they were charging. I don't know. They probably were doing it for free. And this all comes on the heels of just a few months ago. Neverware's second round of funding, millions and millions of dollars, Google being the major contributor to that. So
yeah, and you know, and they didn't say for sure like whether they were overwriting, you know, the entire OS, or they were just sideloading. I'm not sure exactly what they were doing, because again, if you've never done this, go check the video out and you can kind of see a little bit more about this over at YouTube/Chrome Unboxed. But the idea being, you can actually have Neverware running on a USB stick that just runs at boot. Right. And so you don't even have to overwrite your existing platform. And over at Neverware, they have the entire list of all supported. I mean, and it's, gosh, I want to say it might be over 500 devices now.
Oh, at least.
I mean, the last I checked was probably 8-9 months ago, and it was 450 back then. So, and it includes MacBooks and tons of Windows devices. And then they encourage you, here, load this on a USB stick, you know, stick it in your computer and boot up into that USB and just see if it works.
Yeah, and if you want to see it working really well, take an old MacBook that has the high-end hardware from 4 years ago and put Neverware on it.
It'll fly.
It's quick.
Yeah, so very cool thing. And it's just cool to see Google, like, officially, like, really super-duper supporting them.
Yeah, because, like, we knew they were supporting it because of their funding there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was just cool to see at the Bet show to really see them kind of come together and kind of partner on this. So it's really cool that Google's kind of supporting that. So moving right on, though, we've got an Acer tablet.
Yeah, and that got pulled from that same show.
Right.
That was an interesting little bit of a saga there.
And I want to say, did someone hit us up on Twitter and just said, hey, check this out? We were like, wait, what?
And he's removed his tweet since that time, so we'll kind of keep some anonymity there, but it's in our article if you want to see it. Not sure. Obviously, this device was not meant to be shown at the show, so he probably, just for continuity's sake, removed the tweet. But we do have a picture of it and an article up. It is a, we presume, 9.7-inch Acer Chrome OS tablet that someone from Acer had on the show floor at Bet. We've been told by a couple of different people that clearly it was not meant to be shown, but Acer had intended on hoping to have it ready for the show, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, and we found a commit just last week, and maybe it was just this week. Mm-hmm. There was some testing being done on a particular display, and so it was a 9.7-inch display, same resolution as the newer iPads. You know, the one that it's a bonkers resolution, 1586 by whatever. Yeah. It's,
I think they just picked some random numbers and threw them.
It's a 3x4 aspect ratio, 9.7 inches, and from the picture, I mean, it looks, I just like form factor wise, it looks like an iPad. Mm-hmm. With Acer at the bottom, and so we're fairly certain this is a Chromebook we've been tracking, or tablet we've been tracking, called Scarlett. And so everything seems to line up at this point. It looks like it's going to be aimed at education. I mean, they took it to an education conference. And in that commit, there was there's an issue with the display, like having some lines on the screen or something, and they're waiting for Intellux to basically get them some info so that they can, whatever, you know, fix that software problem. And so likely that was probably cropping up, and they said, we need to pull this because it's too big of an issue for us to debut this thing right now.
Right.
And just because they showed it at a show doesn't mean they're going to sell it tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Had they even been ready to show it, had the screen issues or whatever not been there, Chrome OS itself still has some things that has to be ironed out before a tablet can go on the public market. So had they even displayed this at BET, it probably would have been, hey, here's something we're working on, it'll be ready Q3 of who knows. I mean, I would say we're looking late summer, and unless a company is trying to push them to have them ready for next school year, I don't see us actually being able to purchase a Chrome tablet for another 6 months maybe.
Yeah. And who knows? I mean, there are a couple changes, and we're going to talk through a couple of those things here in a second. But, you know, I think by summer they could be ready. But they're probably going to position this thing to get into schools' hands. Because it does seem like, you know, with the rock chip processor, we're not talking about something that is going to be probably aimed at consumers at this point. So, you know, it'll get into schools' hands, and they'll have it for the fall, likely. But they make those purchasing decisions, I want to say, sometime in May. A lot of times, May and June. Mm-hmm. So they need to have it displayed before then. And I would say, since there was a model, they get this little software kink worked out, they can at least get it on showroom floors pretty soon. So cool stuff, and exciting to see. It's a new form factor.
Absolutely. Just one more thing that, another device that consumers or education, you know, folks might be able to use. So.
Right, and we the Acer, well, not necessarily Acer, but Scarlett that we've been tracking has a stowable stylus. Is that correct? I think
Nautilus does.
Nautilus does.
Scarlett,
I believe Scarlett does as well. But we did have someone mention that, and I can't pronounce it, and I'm not going to. The stylus company had a booth set up there, and they were actually used Stettler.
That's how I was saying it in my head when I was.
They had a booth set up, and they were using that stylus with this tablet. And Robbie posted an article about that. There's a link on our site. They actually have a landing page on their site that shows our styli work with these Chromebooks, and it's neat because they look like real pencils, and you know, they're obviously geared towards probably elementary students, but if you're looking for a stylus that feels like you're holding a pencil, it's a good choice. Yeah,
it's cool stuff. But speaking of some of those changes that are, you know, are coming or need to come to Chrome OS for this stuff to work, you know, split screen, parallel apps, Android app side loading. Let's talk through a couple of those.
Yeah, so we've had some quick little videos and articles up in the past couple of weeks about some of these features coming. They're either hidden behind flags, or they're in dev channels or beta, that kind of stuff. But we know they're inbound and they're on their way. And the notable ones for tablets and detachables would be the split screen and the parallel apps. So real quickly, split screen obviously is exactly what you'd expect it to be. It's just that when the device is in tablet mode for convertibles, and or it's just a tablet, as we've seen from Acer, it gives you the ability right now, if you open any app or any window, it's full screen in tablet mode. And then there's a button at the bottom right that looks similar to the same button you would have on your keyboard shortcuts up top. that gives you the overview mode. And so when you hit that, you can drag those smaller windows to the left or to the right and create a split screen, just like you would an Android, for instance. And there's a black bar in the center that helps you divide the screen either into fourths or into halves. It's pretty straightforward, but it's a great multitasking way to use a tablet interface, because not all Android apps are going to work that well, you know, in full screen and all that kind of stuff. And that dovetails right into the parallel apps feature. And so Android apps now are going to be able to run in parallel with one another. So again, trying to keep this truncated, and you can get more details and see a video of this actually happening on the website, chromeunbox.com. But parallel apps right now on Android, there's a lot of apps whenever you exit an app, because you're on a phone usually, it pauses state in the background to save battery. It makes sense. We don't really want that on Chrome OS though, so we have three or four windows open, and you have
can a see game them all over at here. The same time. Yeah.
Yeah, and I got Google Analytics running over here, whatever running over here. When I click away from a particular window, I really don't expect that thing to just stop moving. That's just not the expected behavior on a desktop, and so this actually solves that issue. We were able to open up Monument Valley and have the music was playing, and things were moving over here while checking Google Analytics and seeing real-time viewers on the website while, you know, clicking. I don't remember what the other app was, but all those things were running. It didn't matter which one you were clicked on or interacting with. There was no pause state happening, and so that mixed with split-screen apps, because split-screen apps are actually coming to Android too. So it's not just right now behind a flag, you can enable the flag we have on the website, and the website stuff works. So anything that's Chrome OS related can go into split screen. But this actually enables Android apps to take advantage of that same thing too. So all of these things are like either behind, like I said, behind flags or in development, but it's all going to congeal to this really cool experience on tablets. That, and when we're speaking before of tablets, like the software needs to evolve before tablets are a good fit for anyone. These things need to happen. Like this stuff needs to get
Right, fixed. Especially like, you know, I'm thinking on a plane, you have a Chrome tablet and the Netflix Android app and Monument Valley side by side, split screen, and I'm watching a movie I've downloaded while I'm playing the game and you know, entertaining myself.
And yeah, I mean, and you kind of mentioned this, Joe, like the idea of just Android app side loading. Right now, you've got to put your Chromebook in developer mode, and I just want to mention that's just another thing that's getting developed that. It's going to behave more like our phones, like you expect. If I want to take the risk and download an APK and it says, hey, this could hurt your phone, this could do a thing, but I've downloaded it from something that I trust, like APK Mirror, for instance, I just want to be able to say, you know what, I'm a big boy, go ahead and install that. Right. And right now on your Chromebook, you just can't. And so that's going away as well. So they're going to, it'll be handled the same way Android does, where you just flip that switch in your settings and you can sideload apps. And so all this stuff really is going to congeal, I think, to make the tablet experience, the Android experience, just 100% better on Chromebooks. And we're seeing all of it in motion already. So it's not like, oh, well, one day we'll have this. Like,
no, it's all
it's
stuff
pretty
that's
darn
happening.
Close.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right.
It's all stuff that's happening. And like you said, it'll all come together.
Right.
Right? it'll all come together. And there will be kinks that will, you know, need to be worked out. But, you know, that's the beauty of Chrome OS. It's constantly evolving, you know, as these new devices are coming out, you know, just like any software, right? I mean, you're tweaking the software to make it work with those particular devices. So, so yeah, it's really interesting. Moving on here, we recently found some really interesting kind of web-based gaming, specifically using what I believe is WebGL. Is that right, Robbie?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Some really interesting games that are running in a browser.
Yeah.
And like graphic intensive games that are running in a browser. It's unbelievable. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, we put some links on the website of places. There's lots of places. I mean, you literally can just search WebGL games and, and find all kinds of, like, Paco games is a good one. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, it literally is a 3D gaming, so like a lot of multiplayer first person shooters. You just jump in, you can create an account if you want, or you can just play as a guest, jump into a room and start going at it. And I mean, it looks like stuff that would have been on a computer, I don't know, what,
6 years ago.
Yeah, like
5 years
ago. But that's what was so cool to me, because I mean, I'm a Day of Defeat kind of guy. You know, I like gun game and stuff like that. And if you play those games, you know, it has that older look, but you know, it's meant to be that way. It's supposed to be lightweight because sure. It is online, and now you have a browser rendering. What was the name of the game?
And the one that we're playing, Bullet Force.
Bullet Force. I mean, it was like playing Day of Defeat, the Steam, the Source games from Steam, and I mean, it was exciting. Just open up a web browser and start playing a game. You know, no software to, you know, I've ran Steam on my Chromebook, but you have to have Linux installed and all that, and now I can just hop online and blow some stuff up real quick if I'm in the mood.
Sure.
Yeah, and a lot of that stuff comes from, you know, Chrome took away support for the Unity Web Player, which is a plug-in, pretty heavy plug-in. And then other browsers, like Firefox, dropped it. And so I think Unity's finally just come to the end and said, hey, we're not doing this anymore. And they're pushing their game developers to say, hey, look, WebGL is a legitimate platform with HTML5 that you can deploy these same types of games that you were building in the web player, just with web standards instead. And so that's exciting to see, because, you know, ultimately, eventually, this becomes a situation where you roll up to a website and maybe you pay for your subscription or whatever. You know, you pick the game you want, and it just loads up in the browser. Hit full screen, and you go. Like, forget downloading this, forget installing that. It literally just opens up, plays in your browser, and you just move on. When you want to try something else, I mean, it's brilliant. I see, like, Facebook games, for instance. You know, they've got a pretty big install base there, going that route and just saying, hey, look, you know, you can play literally all of this stuff and interact with people online and not have to download anything.
What was that, like, farm game that you could play? Was it on Facebook?
The Farmville?
Yeah. Farmville? Was that on Facebook?
Yeah. Wow.
Let's bring back Farmville. So... all right, moving on. On that note, moving right on. We've got some Google stuff to talk through. Couple things here. Let's start with the bad thing, and then we'll move on to the cool stuff. Supervised users. I think this was happening while we were at CES. So first of the year, there was some issues. Let's just say that came to the surface, and we were investigating and. And Gabriel, you really kind of dug in here. So what can you tell folks about what happened? And
so supervised users, Google has kind of out of the blue just said, hey, we're dropping it. We're getting rid of supervised users. And they've talked for a long time about replacing it. They've talked for a long time about a new way of doing this. But they've not detailed any of that, and they just out of nowhere said we're taking it away. So as of, I think it was January 15th or 18th, it no longer exists. You can't manage the Chromebooks anymore. You can't set up new accounts. You can't change accounts. Whatever supervised users you had in place when this happened, they're still there, but you can't do anything with them. There are some alternatives. We have an article on the site about MobiSIP, which is a good alternative. I will go ahead and tell you, I've installed it and I've used it. The only drawback of MobiSIP right now is that there is not support for Android on Chromebooks. So if you're looking for an alternative where you can manage all your devices, MobiSIP is really good. But if you have an Android-enabled Chromebook, you have no way to prevent the other users from downloading loading apps from the Play Store. I've been in touch with them, actually spoken with them a couple times this week. They are in the process of updating to a new platform, and they have some things that are supposed to handle that. But as of right now, there's not really a great alternative. I did see a very lengthy forum post in the Chromebook Central forum about setting up a G Suite for free account and a way that you can do that, or I think all in all it ends up costing you like $50 a year, which if you use supervised users, you know that you had to have your own domain, so you were paying for a domain anyway. Right. $50 a year, if you really need to lock down your devices, if you're really into, you know, monitoring that things, and kudos to you if you're doing that. $50 a year, there is a way to manage that, and I'll get something published this week so you guys can see the steps of how to do that. But all in all, Google has kind of dropped the ball on this, and they're not giving users any idea of what's next.
Sure.
They're just it's one of those coming soon things. So
Yeah, so it's a bummer.
Yeah,
so,
it's super unfortunate.
Moving on. So. moving right on. So something cool that we've seen is Fuchsia. So we've known for a little bit that Fuchsia is coming, or that it's in development, not necessarily that it's coming. Right. Who knows? Google may just not do anything else with it. But we have at least seen some videos out there. I think Ars Technica. Is that how you say it? How do you say it?
Ron. Amadeo. Yeah,
so Ron.
I think when he says his name, that's
Ron.
Amadio.
All right. Well,
Ron, sorry, Ron.
We're just going to
butcher your name and your website.
Yeah. So sorry. It's just Ron.
We'll still read your stuff, though.
So anywho, like,
Ron from Ars.
Ron from Ars. Ron from Ars.
Not Mars.
Put up some info and a video showing Fuchsia running on a Chromebook. So what is Fuchsia and what did we see? And yeah, just tell folks about this.
Yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, it's a new OS. Nobody knows exactly what it's for, and Google's been tight-lipped. But they have said it's not a throwaway project. It's not a thing that they're just farting around with. It's legit. It's going to be something, and from the looks of what Ron posted, this isn't because there was some thought maybe it's an IoT thing or, you know, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
this is legit. I mean, it's showing what it's going to do on a phone, what it's going to do on a tablet, what it's going to do on a desktop, how it's going to reorient things, and honestly, the user interface already is something very different.
Very different, and certain things about it are very impressive. The opening of the video, you see Ron scaling the window to more of a phone size and then a full screen, and just the UI by itself is gorgeous. It really is. And just so you know, he didn't have this running on just a Chromebook. He had this running on like $1,000 Pixelbook. So he just decided to put Fuchsia on a Pixelbook.
And it was there are a lot of steps, because we looked at it when they first announced that they were going to have it being developed on Pixelbook. Of course, we were like, oh, cool, let's do it.
Yeah, no.
I looked at the steps and was like, no.
We'll pass.
This isn't like downloading an app on your phone. It requires two devices, and there's a lot of work involved.
It's a lengthy process, so kudos to Ron for getting that rolling.
Thanks for doing that for us.
We didn't have to.
Yeah,
thank you.
Most of it doesn't work, and that's fine. But it gives us clear indication that this is going to end up being a pretty big project. And you got to think, things like Android were 5-6 years in development, so we're probably not going to see anything substantial from Fuchsia probably for the next 4 years, maybe. At best. I mean, we're going to see stuff like this since it's being developed in the open, but they're moving to a different kernel.
And that's kind of the big part, is they've built this on their own kernel. So I think a lot of it is probably future-proofing for Google.
Sure.
And there is no telling where it'll go. If things stay the way they are and they keep moving forward with Chrome OS and whatnot, you know, they might turn Fuchsia into another messaging app. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we just don't know. But it's cool to see it developing. It's cool to kind of keep track of it. But for those of you who are listening and going, oh, God, you know, is Chrome OS going away or is Android going away? No, not anytime soon. And the only logical step, with Android having the market penetration it does and then Chrome OS having the penetration it does already in education, and by the time Fuchsia gets ready to even be deployed, like, the only thing that would make any logical sense would be for Fuchsia to be able to somehow run or encapsulate what these two operating systems already do seamlessly. Like, there's no way Google's going to be like, hey, by the way, we're ditching that stuff, we're going to do a new thing, so all you developers rewrite all your stuff. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
So rest assured, it's going to take a little while. B, the operating systems you know and love aren't going anywhere. And C, if and when they do, the transition will have to be seamless because of the market penetration Google has with what they already have in the market.
Right. And like you said, I mean, in the videos, this was some really nerdy stuff to get this up and running. It was not like, oh, hey, we're going to install this, APK we found or what, not APK or, you know, whatever. I mean, it was pretty intense. So this is far off, and it's cutting edge. It's the next step. It's some cool things that we're taking a look at. Switching gears, we've got some really cool Google Assistant stuff happening in the market. We were out at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, first of the year, and we saw the Google Assistant everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, in products, on the train,
on signs,
on billboards. I mean, you would walk down the strip and there would be massive
Hey Google.
You know, Hey
everywhere.
Google stuff everywhere.
Oops,
and
sorry
about that, folks. Yep, mine just popped
Faux
up.
Pas.
All right, so the keyword. But yeah, I mean, it was just everywhere, and you know, we were having some discussions while we were out there, you know, you you see the Google Assistant stuff, and you see Alexa, and you see Bixby, and you know, yeah, you go into the Samsung booth.
What's that?
You go into the Samsung booth, and it's all, hey, this is all connected through Bixby, and your washer and dryer can be connected to your Bixby, and yada yada yada. So you know, it's really cool to see Google kind of stepping up and saying, hey, nah, hey, check this out. Check out Google Assistant. I mean, it was just everywhere. So. You know, there were some really cool devices that we saw, so maybe we can talk about that a little bit, but just some really cool stuff with Google Assistant going on right now.
Yeah, if you didn't know any better, you would think that Google hosted CES.
Oh my gosh.
Literally, like, everywhere you went, every hotel's marquee had a Hey Google ad on it, and it was Google everything.
Stop saying the keyword.
Sorry, I don't.
Perfect. Dad, there's a mini over there. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, and I think that leads us right into this idea that Google Assistant's finally rolling out the ability to change your hot word.
Right.
So it had all of us had the ability to change our hot word. Mine's going to be pewter. I want to be able to say, "Hey, pewter," like Lego Batman. That's absolutely going to be what happens.
I don't know
what.
Such a nerd.
Oh yeah,
such a nerd.
But so once everybody had their own hot word, you know, like that, I set that Home Mini up that just went off over there, so it would only respond. Now it's still going to respond to the keyword, but if I get trained to refer to mine as pewter. Then that's not going
to
set off anybody else's device.
You have to say it in the Batman voice.
I know.
Pewter.
I'm going to train it to do that, so that every time I have to say, "Hey, pewter."
Yeah.
So the hot words are coming to be able to change those. 9to5 did a really cool APK teardown and saw those lines of code in there. So soon you're going to be able to actually change and say things other than "Okay, G" and "Hey, G." You'll be able to, you know, put in whatever it is you want. Like I said, those other ones have to continue working because a Google Home device has to be able to respond to anyone that talks to it.
Right.
And so they're not locked to just individual users. So
they've
got to keep those keywords. So, you know, what just happened as far as us setting off devices by saying that key phrase, well, that's just not going to go anywhere. But it gets mitigated a little bit because when I'm talking to my device, I don't end up talking. Because, I mean, we have Google Homes.
Everywhere.
We have a Home Max here that we're reviewing right now, which, by the way, is bonkers. And so
the coolest,
and everybody's got Pixels and Android phones and the Pixelbook. You know, there's just all kinds of things that get set off with that hot word. So not having to say that all the time would be pretty cool.
Quite beneficial.
Yeah. So one other quick thing before we wrap this up, and I just want to talk about this because it was one thing that we saw at CES that really kind of caught my attention. And that was the smart displays from Google. So this is a new realm of devices that Google's going to be rolling out with other partners. They're not producing anything at this moment or manufacturing anything at this moment. But essentially, if you've seen the Amazon show, similar device. So the one that we got kind of a hands-on with, and we've got a video on it on the YouTube channel, but it was the Lenovo smart display.
Mm-hmm.
Just brilliant engineering. The thing is beautiful. You know, you could set it up on a counter and it would blend right in. Mm-hmm. But essentially, you're pairing a visual display with the Google Assistant, which, you know, the Google Assistant works great with just audio, but when you pair it with visuals, it takes it to a whole nother level.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, being able to ask about the weather and see it on a screen, you know, rather than just having to hear it and remember it, you know, you can actually look at it and see it. You know, the one thing they walked through with us was the good morning queue and being able to kind of have all your things in a queue when you first wake up.
Right.
Really, really interesting stuff that Google's working on there. And you know, we saw a couple of those devices. The Lenovo one was just the one that we got some hands-on time with.
Yeah, and like to bring that point home, I think, you know, one of the coolest things they showed us, if you haven't ever played this on Google Home, is the
Feeling Lucky
game.
Trivia.
It's trivia, you know. And it's fine to play over the speaker and interact that way, but they pulled up that exact same game, played the same way, except you could touch the answers on the screen and it had a nice graphical interface and it just took the whole experience to a kind of a different level.
Absolutely.
And to me, that just sold me on the idea that, man, like, I still think we're on the very, you know, edge,
the cusp.
Beginning part of what assistants can do anyway to begin with. Like, we're seeing those experiments and stuff of what they can do with audio, and it's like, wow, they've just opened a massive door to all the new stuff that they could think of to do with these. So it's exciting to see all that kind of stuff.
Right, right. Another example they used, and this is something that if you have a Google Home, you may have used, but if you're in the kitchen cooking or doing something like that, you can talk to recipes. Your Google Home, you can send recipes to it, and that's super cool, and it's really helpful. But the smart display takes it one step further, because if you really want to be hands-free while you're cooking, then I think the example they used was rosemary. They had a recipe that was using rosemary in it.
How to prepare it.
Yeah, how to prepare rosemary. And if you're a rookie cook, you're sitting there thinking, well, I don't know how to do that. You can literally say, you know, ask it to show you, and it'll pop up a YouTube video of what to do,
right,
how to prep whatever you're doing. Keeps you completely hands-free. So for people who are wondering what the use cases here are, there's a lot. And as Robbie said, we've really kindly only barely touched base on it. You know, they've talked about finally bringing routines that they talked about at I.O. where you'll come in, you'll tell the display good morning, and it'll walk you through whatever your schedule is, and it'll send directions to your phone and things of that nature. The possibilities are really endless. They really are.
And it's exciting to see what they're going to do. And I want to bring up one last note. We spoke to the folks at JVC, and we've got trying to figure out how to put this little video together, and not exactly sure how we're going to present it, but a quick sneak peek into this. We sat down with one of their head engineers, and he was telling us about, you know, as we walked in, some of the basic stuff they had on display, you know, connected speakers, you know, Chromecast-enabled TVs.
Yeah, and we were like, we've seen this stuff before.
You know, we're here, we'll do our appointment, because we made the appointment, and we'll talk to him. And he sat and just told us kind of about their vision, about what they're wanting to do, and how they're wanting to integrate their products. And the most brilliant part of all of it is they've chosen not to bundle all of their stuff with another layer of software. Right. So, for instance, and I'm not knocking on Philips Hue, it's just the easiest example most people would know. If you go buy 5 Philips Hue bulbs, you also need to buy the bridge. And so when
the
you get home,
they
call it the bridge. And so you go home, you plug your bridge in, you get the Philips Hue app, you connect your bridge to your app, you set up all your lights via the bridge, and then you connect the bridge to the Google Home or Alexa or whatever else is you're using, and then you can talk to your Philips Hue stuff through the assistant. And for a lot of people, honestly, it's just too convoluted. People just aren't going to do that.
Right.
And I've done some of those steps with different devices, and it works and it's okay, but it feels a little weird and a little bolted on. What JVC is doing is instead saying, you know what, we're not going to do that. We're going to basically take the high road. So they're not going to use an app that's going to collect more data or do anything additional or be confusing at all. Simply, just like a Google device, you could buy any of these JVC devices and plug it in, and the Google Home app will see it. The Google Home app will set it up. The Google Home app will deal with it.
Right.
And I can't express how much I love this idea, because I would love, like, they had a light bulb that has a speaker built into it, which is so cool. Your lamps and your can lights and your ceiling and stuff could have speakers in them. And I don't have to run them through a JVC app and set them up. I literally plug them in and open up Google Home. It's going to see it just like it would see a Chromecast or a Google Home device. It's going to see it, allow me to go through a setup process, and I can use it.
Right.
And to me, that makes me want to, when these products start coming out from them, I want to invest my money in that stuff, because I don't want the other layer of software.
Right, and that's kind of their whole vision, is that you have everything's built off of that. If you, whatever functions, like their smart televisions, this one was huge to me, their smart TV, whatever functions are available on that TV are available through the assistant.
Right.
You know, LG just came out with a new line of televisions, and they're phenomenal, they're great, but they're running the assistant. Then of course they have WebOS running, which we love WebOS, but still they have their own assistant built in as well. So you have two assistants on one TV. The LG assistant's capable of doing contextual search and things that the Google assistant's not, and then the Google assistant can do. And it's
just convoluted.
Consumers don't want that. LG, listen, consumers don't want that. When people go buy an Android phone, they want to turn it on and they want to recognize Android. They want to know I click the Play Store and download my apps. They want to know that my phone's capable of doing this. They don't care why or how, and they don't want to have to set it up. The CTO that we spoke with from JVC has his vision of saying, we're going to build off of Android things and Google Assistant, and if the Google Assistant can do it, it's going to be done through the Google Assistant, and that's the way it should be.
And so, I mean, we just, anyone listening, if you've considered buying a JVC product or considering in the future, like, until other companies come on board, I can't recommend them enough, you know, of saying, you know, look, just because they're taking this route, it's the better way. It's similar to when companies finally started making stock Android phones. It's like, thank you. Make great hardware, but stop messing with the software. Stop convoluting it. Stop adding stuff that doesn't need to be there. The tools are in place already. Just use them and build cool hardware around that. And I think JVC's on the road to doing just that.
You can find show notes over at chromeunbox.com/podcast, along with tons of other info covered in this episode. Additionally, you can find us online on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ by searching at Chrome Unboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.